Some of you are fairly new here, and you may not be aware that the teaching we talk about here at this center is actually called, it has a name, it's called Religious Science. This was once called the Atlanta Church of Religious Science, based on the teachings of Dr. Ernest Holmes. It's also called the Science of Mind Center. You may hear those phrases. And even though I love this teaching, and I've made this teaching a major part of my life for many, many years, I still do not consider myself to be what some people call themselves in this teaching, a religious scientist. I don't like the term. First of all, I don't like to be limited by a label, whether it's my job, my race, my politics, or my spirituality. And second, I believe that there are many different paths to achieving what we call spiritual enlightenment, and I don't want to limit myself exclusively to any one teaching. In other words, when we're talking about the place that we go to get our spiritual nourishment, it isn't about what we believe as much as it is about how we live what we believe. Now, this teaching provides me with certain tools that I have found to be compatible with my own spiritual practice, my own belief about God, and my own view of the world, but there are other tools that I use that I did not learn here from other practices that I find just as important. If something works for me in my spirituality, I go ahead and use it, whether it's Sufi breathing techniques for meditation or whatever it happens to be. Some of the tools that I use I get from the teaching of Buddhism. And one of the things that Buddhism teaches that I find interesting is what they call the three jewels, or the three treasures. And these three things are Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Those are the technical terms for them. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. These are three things that every Buddhist uses to guide them on their path. So Buddha is a teacher, Dharma is a teaching, and Sangha is a spiritual community of like-minded people. Now, if you're a practicing Buddhist, what this means is the Buddha as your teacher, the words of the Buddha as your teaching, as a practice, and the Buddhist community that you choose to belong to for support. But in a larger sense, for those of us who are not Buddhist, these three core principles still apply. In order to grow spiritually at any given time, for all of us, we all need a teacher to challenge us. We need a teaching that we can use as a framework for our beliefs, and we need a group of spiritually grounded people to help us keep centered. Now, today I'm going to talk mostly about teachers and teachings. That's the title of the talk. But I don't want to negate the idea of spiritual community as being important. It's no less important than the other two. For many of us, the Sangha is what this community is for us. That's the purpose this serves. Because many of us are no longer interested in being at a church or a synagogue or a mosque or a temple or however we were raised because our religion tells us we have to be there. Once we were able to make our own choice for our own spiritual community, we made the conscious choice to be around people who were positive and open-minded, people who wanted to grow and to expand themselves spiritually, people who came together not because they belonged to a certain religion, but because they had a similar vision of God, themselves, and the world. Now, as you can see, if you look around this place, this is probably the most diverse spiritual community in the city of Atlanta, possibly in the whole country, as far as I'm concerned. But we all, and it's not just diverse in terms of appearance and male, female, gay, straight, black, white, all these different things, age. Sure, it's diverse that way, but we are very diverse spiritually. We have people here who go to Catholic Mass Saturday evening so they can come here in the morning. We have people who belong to Buddhist communities but are also here on Sunday morning or they attend the classes. But what we also all share is a set of core values that we call New Thought. Of course, as we all know, this is quite different from a traditional religion. It's not a religion, in fact. It's a philosophy, a way of living. But the problem with traditional religion that most of us have found is that it often becomes confining, both mentally and spiritually. For a lot of people, instead of using their religion as a practice, they use it as a label to define themselves and to exclude other people who believe differently. And that is when our spiritual community becomes a prison instead of a path. Now, there's an old story that highlights this. I love it. It's about a man who dies and goes to heaven. This is metaphorical, okay? Don't take it as what we believe. And he shows up, and St. Peter's going through his paperwork, all right? And he says, you know, you didn't put down a religion of preference, but that's okay. We have that happen from time to time. Let me show you around and you can pick a religion that you like. So he took him to a hallway, and this long hallway, as far as you could see, had doors lined on every side. And they went to the first door, and St. Peter signaled him over, opened it very, very quietly. And the man looked over his shoulder, and inside this door, there was a big room of these people who were waving their Bibles, and they were singing hymns, and St. Peter whispered to him, "Those are the Baptists." And he closes the door. So they go to the next door, and in the next door, they see a bunch of people who are drinking and laughing and playing bingo, and he says, "Those are the Catholics." Okay? And he closes the door. Goes to the third door, and there's a huge picnic going on, and there are hundreds of children running around, and he said, "Those are the Mormons," and he closes the door, and on and on and on. Now, after they'd closed the seventh or eighth door, you know, the Presbyterians and the Methodists and the other, you know, Eastern religions and all this, the man stopped and said, "This is all very interesting, but why are we whispering?" And St. Peter says, with a sigh, "Because they all think they're the only ones up here." All right? Okay. So that, you know. All right. That's what a lot of people think a spiritual community is supposed to be. But getting back to the other two jewels, to the teachers and the teachings, first let's talk about spiritual teachings. Because I think very strongly that it's important for us to understand why we believe what we believe and what our framework of belief does for us. Now, people end up believing certain things spiritually for a lot of reasons. Some people just stay in their parents' religions and they continue through their whole life to believe what they were taught as children. Other people change because they prefer elaborate rituals and costumes and the bells and the smells and all those kind of things. And some people go to a different religion or community because they like to know what the rules are. They want very specific rules so they know what rules to follow. Some people went on a spiritual search when they were a young adult. How many people did that here? And they find something that worked, and they stay with that for the rest of their life. Some people simply go where their friends or their spouse or their partner or whoever it is wants to go. They just go, "That's fine. It doesn't really matter to me." There are some people who change their spiritual beliefs monthly. All right, I call them spiritual gypsies. We have them rotating through here. They go to Unity and here and the Buddhists, and they keep moving around, and that's perfectly all right. While other people don't believe in anything, so what we could say is they believe in non-belief. That's their practice. Now, the good thing about having a teaching that we follow is that it encourages us to believe in something greater than we are so that we have some sort of a foundation that we can go to when things get tough, when these things happen, like Ursula mentioned, when change happens in our life. The bad thing about it is, or can be, that we stop thinking. And when we stop thinking, we talk about this all the time, we stop growing. We become locked in our old beliefs, afraid to change, or we simply close our eyes to the outside world, which brings stagnation. Now, one thing that attracted me to this teaching 26 years ago when I first showed up, I was sitting back on that side, right about where Susan's sitting, back over there, at least as it was taught here by my teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, was that it never felt stagnant here. It was never in a rut, never the same thing. And I later figured out that was because I didn't come here to follow a certain path. I came here to learn how to think about spirituality in a better way. And I learned that the answer to all my spiritual questions that I have been asking for years was, "It depends." Okay? That was the answer. And it depended on me. It depended on my consciousness. You see, once again, this is not a religion. It's a way of thinking and being and living. I love to listen to people who come here for the first time, and they realize that we are teaching what they always believed. They just didn't know there was a place that taught it. Anybody run into that or have that when you came here? A lot of us did. Almost everyone who comes here and stays had a similar experience. At first, when we found all these other people who shared our beliefs, we were excited. I know I was. And if we had been, in addition, stuck for a very long time believing what the world told us to believe, living a so-so kind of a life, getting average results from our random thoughts, if that's the way we had been living, when we come in here and get our deepest thoughts authenticated or verified, whatever you want to call it. It's exhilarating to walk into a place like this and hear those ideas being spoken from the platform and from the other people. Things like, our thoughts are creative. The universe supports us unconditionally. All the power of God is within each and every one of us. Change your thinking, change your life. That's powerful, powerful stuff. But no matter how long we are here, if we don't keep studying and questioning and exploring, we're going to get stale. If we just listen on Sunday morning, but we don't think when we get home, and we don't study and don't read and don't practice what we hear, nothing new will happen in our life. So we have to be personally challenged as often as possible in order to evolve into what we are all meant to be. And that takes more than just memorizing scripture and going to communion. We figured that out, or standing and kneeling and genuflecting and ringing the bell, like the Catholic faith I was raised in. It takes not only thought, it takes honesty, it takes initiative, it takes personal discipline, and it takes constant attention to what we are thinking and feeling in here. Not just on Sunday morning or when we're in class. What we are thinking and feeling in the present moment, because that is where the power is. And that kind of thinking and attention inside and out is challenging. It's very challenging. Of course, not everyone wants to be in a teaching that challenges them. There are a lot of people that believe that spirituality is too big and too complicated and too important for them to make decisions on their own. So they turn to something that tells them not to think. They turn to something that tells them to have faith in things that can't be explained and make no sense. But some of us refuse to live that way. Because, believe it or not, most of us in here don't like rules. Okay? We don't like rules, all right? Especially spiritual rules, okay? We don't like being told what to believe. That's why I don't try to do it. We don't like being told how to behave or what God supposedly wants us to do or not to do. We believe that our spiritual framework, our dharma, should be flexible, expandable, and personal. We want to be part of a teaching that is not so rigid that it breaks or bruises when life knocks us around a little bit. We believe in our own God-given intelligence, our own creativity, our own strength, and our own individuality. We believe in, as we say in the Declaration of Principle every week, the immortality of the individual soul forever unfolding. Forever unfolding. We believe in our own divinity. We're not God, but God is all we are. That's what we believe. We also believe in the divinity of everyone else and everything. You see, as far as I'm concerned, our spiritual beliefs and practices have to be able to change. And when I say change, I don't mean change in their essence, at their depth, but they have to change in how we practice them and in how we relate to them. We need to be able to add good new ideas as we find them and to release old ideas when they no longer serve us. Not that they're bad, they just aren't appropriate for us anymore. That's why any teaching that serves a positive purpose in our life has both an outer framework and an inner framework. There's what it tells us to do, that's the outer framework, and then there is what we actually choose to do. That's the inner framework. Both of them are important, but we have to know which is which. We don't want to confuse the outer with the inner. For example, our teaching may tell us, I mentioned it a lot, different other teachings do this, our teaching may tell us that we need to meditate if we want to connect with the spirit within. But how we do it, or when we do it, or even if we do it, is completely up to us. So breaking the spiritual rules is not a sin, and it doesn't displease God. It's simply a choice we make that creates certain results. It's simply, cause and effect. So we should have the good sense to know what helps us grow spiritually and what doesn't, and to make the necessary changes where? In here, in consciousness, until we get the results we desire. How do we know we have the results we desire? Because it feels right. So an effective spiritual teaching should never take the form of dogma or rigid requirements to achieve salvation or divine approval. Instead, it should simply provide us with intelligent guidelines to living a happier and more fulfilling life. So a teaching is not what we are, it's simply the way we choose to practice what we believe. That's why I am not a religious scientist. I am someone who chooses to practice religious science principles because they work for me in my life. But when they don't fit, which doesn't happen often for me anymore, but when they don't fit, I go to something else. I look for something else. This is sort of like George Bernard Shaw, the great playwright. Someone asked him once, "What do you think of Christianity?" And he said, "I think it's a wonderful idea. Someone ought to try it sometime." You know? There are no good or bad teachings. There are no good or bad teachings. There are only people who practice them in healthy or unhealthy ways. Which brings us to the subject, the third jewel, of spiritual teachers. Throughout history, every new teaching, philosophy, or religion came out of an old one. And in most cases, there was one teacher in the beginning who belonged to both worlds. The Buddha was a Hindu prince who discovered new ways to practice his spirituality. So later on, his followers started to call that Buddhism. He never called it that, but later on, that's what it became known as. Jesus was a practicing Jew who expanded his beliefs to include the recognition of the presence of God in each of us. Later on, his followers called that Christianity. Muhammad practiced a desert religion with a whole variety of different gods, but when he channeled the Quran in the cave outside of Mecca with its emphasis on personal responsibility and behavior and a focus on one god, who was Allah, one of the smaller gods in the group that they had been worshiping, later his followers called that Islam. If you look at Judaism, Catholicism, Mormonism, all these different teachings, it's all the same thing. Even this teaching came out of the spiritual principles common to all of the major religions because it's all connected. Spirituality is not separated into denominations. It is all connected. And whatever teaching works for us does so not because of the teaching, but because of how we personally relate to it and practice it. That's what every great spiritual teacher from the beginning has been trying to tell us. The problem is, as someone once said, using Christianity as an example, Jesus was pointing to the answer, and we started worshiping his finger. That's what happened, all right? Now, the same is true with every authentic spiritual master who ever lived. They weren't creating religions. They were pointing at the same answer, every single one of them. You see, true spiritual teachers never demand their students complete devotion. They never insist that they are right and everyone else is wrong, and they never try to make their students exactly like them. In fact, the very best teachers are so completely centered in their faith, in their beliefs, that they don't care if anyone else agrees with them or not, not even their students. Not even their students. They offer the gift, and the gift is an idea, it's not a religion. They offer the gift, and those who see value in the gift receive it and make it their own. Great spiritual teachers are not gurus or saints to be put on a pedestal. The teachers are a mirror. The great spiritual teachers are a mirror. They are a mirror that shows us what we are, but also a mirror that shows us what we could be. And they do that for us because that's what their teachers did for them. Now, there's a wonderful example of this in the teaching of Taoism, which is another of my favorites, and it's based on the teachings of a man by the name of Lao Tzu, who lived in China during the 5th century BC, about the same time as Confucius and the Buddha. Nobody knows anything about him personally. In fact, his name means the old master. And there's a legend that he was known to everyone. The emperor went to him. He was known by thousands and thousands of people. But one day, he decided that it was time for him to move forward in his own life, and he went to the Great Wall of China to one of the gates, and one of the guards there, as luck would have it, recognized him and said, "Master, where are you going?" He said, "I'm leaving. I'm moving forward." And he said, "Please do not leave without sharing your wisdom." So he consented. He sat in a little house about, just very close to the gate, And he sat down for 3 days. You keep hearing that in religion, three days, this kind of stuff going. And he wrote down 5,000 words or 5,000 Chinese characters, which are now called the Tao Te Ching, one of my favorite spiritual books, or the Book of the way to live. And then he handed it to the guard, and he walked through the gate, and he was never seen again. Now, I think he went through that gate because he was going somewhere where he could learn something new. He had been feeding people, and now he himself even more needed to be fed. And I say that because the best teachers are always students first. They inspire us to learn because they themselves are always learning. And they teach us in many different ways. They teach us with books and seminars in person, but the best way they teach us is by their example, looking at their own life. But our responsibility, and this is where this teaching comes into it, our responsibility as good students is never to follow teachers of any kind mindlessly. Our duty as followers or students is to question them continually, to try and take what they tell us and see if it works for us, and to add our own unique wisdom to what they teach us. That's why the Buddha's last words to his followers before he died were, "Work hard to gain your own salvation." Work hard to gain your own salvation. Now, any teacher worth following, whether it's for a weekend or a lifetime, has certain qualities. Certain qualities, and you can recognize them. We can see them all the time. They need to be, in their own way, because they're all different, kind, balanced, healthy, compassionate, open. They should respect everyone, even people who disagree with them. They should have a sense of humor. If you get a teacher without a sense of humor, find another one. I suggest that very strongly. They should have a reverence for all life. Their ego should be in check. And they should want us, their students, to be, first and foremost, true to ourselves, but also they should want the best of their students to surpass them. The best of their students to surpass them. Sir Isaac Newton, one of the great scientists, but also one of the great students of science of all time, once said, "If I see further than other men, it is because I stand on the shoulders of giants." I stand on the shoulders of giants. Those shoulders belong to our teachers, and they are standing on the shoulders of those who taught them. The truth is, if you think about it, we all have one real teacher in our life and one student. Guess who that is? It's us. It's us. We recognize the wisdom in certain other people's in different conditions and different times. We recognize that wisdom as it resonates in us. And that wisdom resonates with and awakens the wisdom that we already have so that we can now expand into something greater than we were before. That's why our greatest teachers remain with us after we're gone. In my case, spiritually, my greatest teacher so far was Dr. Kennedy Schultz, the man who started this center in 1979. As a matter of fact, today, September 13th, is the 9th anniversary of Kennedy's passing, for those who knew him. And I learned a lot from him. I have a picture on my dresser that I look at every day. Today I looked at it and said, "Here we go, every Sunday. Here we go again," you know. And he's got this little smile on his face. It was the night before he retired. He's got this smile like, "I'm so proud and so happy at everything I've done." And I've got a smile on my face like, "What the hell have I got myself into?" You know. I noticed that today for the first time. It's funny. But in the 10 plus years since my teacher retired, I know that I have also brought my own wisdom to the mix. And I have shared my beliefs and my growth with many of you, and I've seen many of the people that I call, or they call themselves my students, I have seen them awaken to their own spiritual magnificence. Now, personally, I consider myself a student who has been allowed to share what I have learned with others who are excited about the same things I am. That's the gift I continue to receive, the ability to share, and will continue to receive in this work that I've chosen to do. Now, there's one more thing that we need to remember, and that is that our teachers are never with us forever, nor should they be. Eventually, either we move on or they do. Now, we may leave because we've learned from them everything we need to learn, or we may leave because we know that the time has come for us to practice what we have learned, and we know that we need to do it alone. And it's hard sometimes to get that separation because we love being with them. We are so grateful for what we've gotten, but it's part of the process of growth. That is what allows each of us to become teachers in our own right to those who come after us. On the other hand, our own teachers leave us sometimes for many different reasons. Sometimes they are taken from us, like Jesus was from his followers or Kennedy was from here. Sometimes they die. Sometimes they simply move on to new roles that no longer include us. But even though they leave our presence, they never leave us completely, because any teacher who has touched our life, we are joined forever with that person by our shared knowledge and shared wisdom. So a part of them always remains with us. And if we focus on what they taught us and what we learned, rather than focusing on them as a guru or a master, then we can always get back to them whenever we want. All right? Now, since 1999, 10 years this last June, I have had the honor to be on the stage and share with you what I continue to learn from this teaching, from my old and new teachers, from you, and from the world. But I've made the decision that it's time for a change in my life. It's time for a change. And for that reason, I share with you this morning that I will be retiring in 1 year. September 1st, 2010, I am going to turn this over to someone else. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be here. Now, I realize this is a surprise for many of you, but what I ask of you is to support me in this decision and to be excited with me about this new phase of my life. The truth is, I am doing what I tell you to do every week. Live, grow, change, challenge yourself, step out into the world, and try something new. 2 months ago, I had not made this decision, but I put a quote in the newsletter at the top of the article. I didn't know at the time that it was going to come out right now. It's from Tennessee Williams, and the quote says, "There is a time for departure even when there is no certain place to go." Very powerful statement. I have no plans. I've got a lot of different options. You may hear rumors, but don't give them any attention. I'm not starting a new church. I'm not leaving for any reason that I'm unhappy with from here. I am consciously moving forward to a new phase in my life. Now, next September, I have one of those pesky little zero birthdays coming up. You know those ones? All right? Okay. And I don't have any problem with that. I'm very, very happy with it. All right? It's a milestone. It's a nice time for me to go. For 18 years, I have been a part of the leadership of this center. I was on the board, I was the treasurer, then I was a staff minister, assistant minister, and senior minister for what will be 11 years by next year. It was and continues to be a wonderful experience and a great learning opportunity, and now it's time for me to do something new, and I have no idea what that's going to be. Isn't that fun? Isn't that fun? All right. Now, thank you. That's my part. And I'll be around. You guys will be sick of me in a year anyway, you know? Anyway, some of you are wondering what's going to happen next. I can only tell you to pay attention and stay involved, because this center is greater than any one, two, or three people. It really, really is. This is an idea that is greater than anyone who has ever been here, whether it's sitting in a seat or up here on the platform. When Kennedy retired, there were a lot of people who said we would never survive. Not only have we survived, we thrive. We have thrived, all right? And when I leave, there'll be a new person on this platform. And right now, I and the rest of the board of trustees, who are going to be up here on the stage with me during the treatment, are already gathering the necessary information to provide you with the choices for our successor. It may be someone who's among us now. It may be someone who comes in from outside. But you are the ones who are going to make the choice. And you'll get a chance to see people, to see candidates, and then you will vote, and that will determine who comes up on this platform. Now, I'm going to be here for a year to help with the process, and I'm going to be teaching classes. I'm going to love the classes, have a marvelous time. I'll be intimately involved. The talks, I'm excited about where I'm going to be able to go this year. But my request of you, and you, and you, and you, all of you, as I begin to what I expect to be the best year of my ministry ever in my life, what I ask of you is to re-examine your support for this center, your support in terms of time, money, and energy. Re-examine that. Is this something that you want to continue, survive, and to thrive even more? Because this place is essential to the spiritual landscape of the Atlanta community. Absolutely essential. So my successor will need all the support that you can give him or her. I will be supporting them and helping them. The board will be helping them. But these are interesting times that we face, to say the least. We have all sorts of challenges. We have financial pressures right now. We have parking issues. Anybody notice that one? Okay. And we have the upcoming major renovation of the Woodruff Arts Center. That's going to impact us for a while, maybe for a year or more. However, there is nothing we can't overcome by using the principles that we teach, and I have complete faith in this teaching, in the board, and in you, the members and friends of the Spiritual Living Center. This is a special place. It's not going away, and I look forward to speaking at our 50th anniversary in the year 2029, and I hope you're there too. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is. At this time, I'd like to invite the Board of Trustees up on the stage with me. You may not know the board. This year, it's important for you to start finding out who they are and talk to them. We'll do everything we can to communicate with you everything that's going on. And they'll be here after the service out in the lobby, any questions you have, whatever. But once again, right now, they said, well, we'll be there to answer questions. And I told them, we don't know anything, all right? Okay, we've got a year for this process, and these are the individuals. This is not, have we got everybody? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, we got everybody, you know. Scott Baker, Ken Wilcox, what's your name, sweetheart? Yeah, Kim Brown, Bill Harris, Mike Berry, Sibby Tansel, Stephen Fleming, and Susan Fenwick. So. All right, I invite you now to join me in treatment. This is what I know. I know that life is an incredible spiritual experience. It is constantly flowing, constantly moving. Life is not short, life is eternal. It is endless. In this plane of existence right now, I am here as spirit expressing itself in the greatest possible way. That includes changing, growing, expanding, trying new things, being excited about every single part of life. And I know that my spirituality is not a part of my life, it is truly the foundation of my life. Everything I do during the day, from washing dishes, making the bed, driving on the highway, whatever it happens to be, is a part of my spirituality. And this center, this beautiful, miraculous, amazing place, which is not a center in itself, it is a joining of spiritual power of those who come to this teaching. This center is an idea that deserves my support. It deserves my recognition because it gives so much to me in my life. So I know that in the time to come, that all of this process will flow smoothly and easily, that the continuation of this center is assured because it is a spiritual idea. I know that whoever is the next person on this platform will be a wonderful, warm, loving, powerful teacher because they will be a student dedicated to this teaching. And I know that every single person involved in this process is respectful, supportive, and loving towards everyone else who is also involved in this process because this is a place that belongs to all of us. So I invite you now to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind, all of us together, and in this silence, instead of simply looking within, let us recognize that we are all looking in the same place. In this silence, let us all be completely joined together at the spiritual level, simply knowing that this place will be here for a long, long time. Let's know this together. Take these moments for yourself in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred truth and significance in my life, I accept it, I embrace it, and with a deep appreciation for all that life has given to me, all I have received from this teaching and from this place, and all that I am able to give moving forward, I give thanks, I accept it, and I release this knowing into consciousness calmly, smiling within, with a total trust in the process of life as it moves forward. This is the truth. I accept it and release it, and so it is.